Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of It's a Bronx Story, a podcast by two lifelong Yankees fans about all things Yankees with a fun twist at the end of each episode. My name is Ryan.
And I'm Jatinder.
We met in college and had an immediate connection through the Yankees. As our friendship has continued, one thing has remained constant, our love for talking about the Yankees. We have been doing at least weekly recaps about the Yankees for years now and figured why not record it and let others join in on the conversation. This is how the idea of this podcast was born. As a background for me, I grew up in Syracuse, New York, and have been a Yankees fan for as long as I knew the ins and outs of baseball. I played baseball for most of my youth life and continue to play it recreationally any chance I get. I went to college at the University of Vermont, which is where I met Jatinder. We both majored in accounting. Trust me, real exciting stuff. Throughout college, we got to witness some very exciting Yankees teams, namely the 2017 run that had every fan on the edge of their seat. With this year really ramping up since the All-Star break, we think it's a perfect time to include all of you in our weekly discussions. I'm going to pass it off to Jatinder to introduce himself, and then we can get into where we want the direction of this podcast to go.
So I'm Jatinder. I grew up in the Bronx, so I've been a lifelong Yankee fan. I remember going to games when I was like 10. I remember in high school, like I would go to the computer lab, print off tickets at 12, and then take the train to go to the Yankee games at 1. So like that's how hardcore of a Yankee fan I was. And then just in Vermont, just to give some background, that's a Red Sox stranglehold. Like you will not find any Yankee fan, which is why when I met Ryan, it felt good. I was like, finally, someone I could talk to about Yankees. I think that's pretty much all we talked about when we first met, right, Ryan?
Yeah. Like, remember the first time that I met Jatinder, we were in a study group for one of our statistics classes, and I walked in and Jatinder was watching the Yankees game and I had one of my Yankees shirts on, and it was an immediate connection.
Yeah, I think I was like, oh, you're a Yankee fan, which I guess obviously you're a Yankee fan, you're wearing a Yankee shirt, but that was kind of just gauging whether or not you're like a real Yankee fan. But it was like, me and you would just like talk about Yankees. Like that was like our backup option every time we talked of like, how's classes? But how about the Yankees?
Yeah. And so just to kind of give you guys a rundown of what we want these episodes to look like. For this first episode, we think it'd be great to recap the Yankee season to date, starting way back in 2020 when we went to the playoffs in the shortened season. Just give everyone a recap there and up to the season to date, because a lot has happened. And we're going to try to make it as compact as we can to not have this episode be hours long, because we all know we can talk about the Yankees for days. I'll highlight some of the big minor league names that we've seen rise up this year, looking at you, Volpe and Dominguez. And to round it out, we'll get into the debate that Jatinder and I have been having since we first met. Is Jiminy Cricket a grasshopper or a cricket? After the first episode, we plan to recap the past week of Yankees baseball, releasing an episode every Sunday, maybe even every series if we get a good response from you guys. These episodes will also cover any weekly highlights from the Baby Bombers and any noteworthy things around the MLB. Each episode will end off with a new debate question to give you a refreshing, fun discussion to send you off for the rest of your day. We would also love to hear from you guys with any Yankees questions or your own fun questions that you want to hear us debate. You can send us your questions on Twitter or Instagram at TheBronxStory. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the seventh inning stretch. So join us now for Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Ladies and gentlemen, he who breaks the rules goes back to the house of pain.
Okay, so just picking up with the 2020 season, we just wanted to recap what happened and what led to the 2021 offseason and going into the year. So as we all know, it was a shortened season. We had all the COVID issues. The season didn't start until, was it June or July?
July.
Season didn't start till July. Everyone hated that. I know I was dying for baseball. Jatinder and I talked about it all the time. And then it finally came back. Everyone's excited. Everyone thought it was the year for the Yankees. We have the powerhouse. We got our man Gerrit Cole. And then we kind of slowed down a little bit during the season. Everyone chalked it off to the shortened season. Everyone's not quite ready. But we did make it to the playoffs. The Rays obviously finished in first place. And we kind of breezed through the wild card against the Indians, and then we went up against the Rays.
And we lost yet another heartbreaking series. Chapman blows the game, game five, gives up a home run to Mike Brosseau, who the Yankees have been chirping at all season. Everyone knows about Chapman throwing up high against Brosseau, got a suspension, and then he also hits a home run to win the series after like a 10-pitch at-bat. It was crazy.
As a Yankees fan, I think we all know how that feels. Obviously, Jose Altuve, he hit that walk-off against us.
Has had a history of blowing it in the postseason, even with the Cubs in the
against
Game 7
Rajan
World
Davis.
Series. Yeah, yep. So I think a lot of Yankee fans were thinking, could Chapman be the closer for the postseason? He's elite in the regular season, but could he handle the postseason? If we needed to win a game, would you trust Chapman to save it for you?
Yeah, I mean, especially me, I think right after that game, I remember texting you, Jatinder, that I don't trust Chapman anymore. I don't think he's our closer, because that was the second year in a row. 2019, mm-hmm. Jose Altuve walked us off to end our season right after, I believe it was DJ LeMahieu that year in the top of the ninth to tie it, mm-hmm. or top of the 10th maybe. And then Jose Altuve just ended it right there the next inning. And it was kind of similar to 2020 when Gerrit Cole put together a great game. We were in it all game. The offense, again, just died for us in the playoffs. Oh. But we were there. And then I think everyone knew it. The longer that at-bat went on, I remember Brosseau hitting an absolute rocket foul earlier in the at-bat. I think we all knew it was coming. And when it happened, it was just another heartbreaking loss. And we knew we had to do something different for next year. Obviously, it was a shortened season, so that could have played a factor. But you can't just keep ending our seasons like we have. This team has been capable of winning World Series since 2017 and just hasn't even been able to get to the World Series. So we all knew something needed to change going to the 2021 offseason.
Yeah, I think going into the offseason, I was looking at the closer market. I was like, Liam Hendricks would be a nice guy to get. But we kind of didn't do anything for the first part of the offseason. I remember just kept on waiting and waiting. I was like, okay, Cashman, do something. You know, we have these sky high expectations, and it seems like the White Sox and Braves were the big winners of the offseason early. They were making moves. It seems like they were going for it. The White Sox especially seemed like they had an open division and they were trying to expand, but the Yankees did finally make some moves.
Yeah, I think they definitely showed that they want to compete this year. Again, we all saw there wasn't really many huge name pitchers to get this offseason. So I think Cashman going for some more reclamation projects in Corey Kluber and Jameson Taillon. Obviously, Corey Kluber, Klubot nickname, makes sense, fits him. He's been incredible throughout his career, but he has been dealing with a lot of injuries. So no one really knew what to expect from him.
Even Taillon was coming off Tommy John surgery. So that was our rotation coming into the season, sky high potential, but you had the injury risk. Because we had coming into the season, we had Cole. That was the only true pitcher that we knew what we were getting.
Yep.
Kluber coming off injury. Monty was coming off Tommy John surgery. So he hasn't pitched a full season. Taillon was coming off a Tommy John surgery, didn't even pitch in 2020.
Yeah.
Herman was coming off suspension. We didn't know what to expect from him after such a long layoff. Severino was still coming back from Tommy John, wasn't going to be back with us until July coming into the season.
Yeah, so obviously a lot of question marks. If we didn't sign Kluber and Taillon, our rotation would have been considerably worse going into the year. But we made the moves. Obviously, earlier in the year, Corey Kluber and Jameson Taillon were looking a little bit shaky. I think more so Jameson Taillon. Kluber had a few rough starts early, but he really settled in. Obviously, we all know the no-hitter happened against the Rangers, his former team. That was a fantastic game. And then Taillon, we all know he's been incredible lately. So those two moves really look good on paper. Obviously, Kluber's hurt right now, but the hope is that he comes back for the playoffs. He can really contribute for this team, whether it be out of the bullpen or the rotation. So we did make the moves. We also signed Justin Wilson and Darren O'Day to kind of shore up the bullpen.
That was after trading
Ottavino.
Adavino, yeah, to the Red Sox of all teams. So we were trying to save, we were all offseason, we were trying to do like a juggle act of trying to build the team, but also stay under that luxury tax. So one big question was whether or not we were going to re-sign DJ also. That was, we all expected it, but it was not a for sure because we thought DJ was going to get a massive deal and was going to be out of the Yankees' price range. They ended up signing him to a six-year, $90 million contract, which all things considered is a great contract for
Yankees.
Yeah. Like that set us up for that offseason. I think that was our first move in the offseason to get everything rolling. And then we started getting Kluber and Tyone. And then you really felt good about the Yankees offseason. And then they got Darren O'Day and Justin Wilson, who are really solid relief pitchers historically.
Yeah. And I think I'm glad you brought up the luxury tax, because I think that's something that a lot of fans that don't really understand the nuances of the money side of baseball, they may look at it and say, oh, but what about the Dodgers? Look at them. They're spending $290 million a year. The Yankees are one of the most valuable sports franchises in the world. They can easily spend just as much as anyone else. Why are they trying to stay under the luxury tax? I think it's really important for everyone to know, if we were to go over the luxury tax this year, that breaks our reset point and we would lose a lot of international signing money. And this year there are two huge international free agents that the Yankees are going after. And I'll kind of highlight them a little bit more during our minor leaguer kind of recap, but there's some great guys out there that if the Yankees were to go over their luxury tax limit, they wouldn't be able to sign those players. So this is kind of a season of Brian Cashman saying, hey, let's get as much as we can out of this team. We have what it takes to win without going over the luxury tax. Let's try and stay under and then really solidify this team for the future. Because as much as we want to win right now, as much as we love this team and want to win with this core, you always have to think about the future. And that's kind of why the Yankees are always contenders, is not only do they have the money to spend, but they know how to kind of make that farm system stable enough to kind of keep a nice flow of new players for the team. And I think that's something that people often overlook. If you're to go over that luxury tax all the time, we're not going to sign guys like Jason Dominguez. Like, he would not be a Yankee right now if we went over the luxury tax every year. And also, let's remember the Dodgers were staying under the luxury tax for a few years. And that's why they're able to spend this now, is because they reset their tax. So I just think that's an important thing for people to remember.
What also built the Dodgers was they had an incredible farm system. You know, you don't just become a powerhouse without developing players. So that's what the Yankees want to do. They want to develop their players. Signing Dominguez, who was one of the most hyped prospects coming up in recent memory, you know, they wouldn't have the international money to even sign him. So that was big plays by Cashman.
Yeah, exactly. I think as much as we all want to spend $300 million a year, like Cashman has the pockets to do, you always got to think about, what is this going to do to our future? And I want to win a ring too, and we can with this team. So if that means just spending a little bit less money and making a big splash next year, I think that's what we got
to
do.
I think we had the core to do it from 2017 to even now. Like, we have a good core to win a World Series.
Yeah.
And I think the White Sox were making moves, but I thought the AL was wide open. I thought the Yankees were pennant favorites coming into the season.
Yeah, definitely. And that kind of gets us into spring training time. And as we all know, like the Yankees of past years, the injury bug just hit us yet again.
Yeah.
And
so
we started the year hurt.
So Luke Voit and Britton were out to start the season. They were going to be out at least a month. So we knew we didn't have that big bullpen piece for like the bridge for Chapman. And then Voit, who we didn't even talk about last year, took major steps. He led the league in home runs. Like, he was a big part of the Yankees lineup. Everyone was hurt, and it seemed like he was carrying that lineup.
Yeah. And I think another important update that we had at the beginning of the season was that Clark Schmidt was going to be out. Mm-hmm. Obviously, at the end of last year, we saw a little bit of Clark Schmidt. He didn't really do amazing, but we all know he's a top prospect. We all know what his ceiling is. And that was kind of a bummer for a lot of fans to see him starting the year hurt, because we thought this could have been the year where he really started to contribute for this team.
I thought coming into the season, we had our injury concerns for our rotation. I thought he was going to be a big piece. I thought him and Devi, I really liked having a six-man rotation just to keep everyone healthy, because they were either coming off injury or a long layoff. Plus, it was a shortened season. Gerrit Cole is a workhorse, but a shortened season, he didn't pitch that many innings. You know, I'm not sure how many more innings you want to pitch him. So I thought having a six-man rotation with, you know, Clark Schmidt or Devi coming into the rotation would really help them. And then we obviously had Severino on track to come back mid-July. And we all know what Severino can do.
Yeah, that was definitely a big blow to the team. So that leads us in to the beginning of the season, the month of April. We went 12-14 that month. Definitely not what everyone expected. No one was really happy with that. The team wasn't really stringing together consistent at-bats, a lot of strikeouts, a lot of double plays, not a lot of home runs, which is what this team is known for.
At that point, I think we were bottom of the league in runs, maybe.
Yeah. So
we also got swept by the Rays early in the season, and that was a team that was giving us a lot of trouble, especially in 2020. Obviously, we lost the ALDS to the Rays, but that's been like probably our biggest rivals. I know the Red Sox are still our rivals, but the Rays seem to be that team just because they were always in contention. Coming into this season, the Red Sox was an afterthought for me. I thought they were a fourth place team.
Yeah. Yeah, same. And I think it's really important to note how much we floundered against the AL East in the first month. So just looking at the schedule, we lost two games out of three to the Blue Jays. We won two out of three against the Orioles, which is good, but then two out of three lost to the Rays, two out of three lost to the Blue Jays, got swept by the Rays in a three-game series, split a four-game series with the Orioles. All of that, just thinking about how that puts you to start the season, not only is 12-14 not a good record in general, but we just got absolutely destroyed by AL East teams, which with how this division is shaped up this year and kind of what we knew going into the year, that's just, it's not going to set you up for success.
It seemed like they wouldn't close out series. Like that Orioles series that we took two out of three, they're a bad team. You should sweep them. There's no reason why. And then we split the series against the Orioles in a four-game set. We should be taking three out of four. And it's like, if you want to go anywhere, you have to beat up on the bad teams. And the Orioles were that bad team. And we just didn't do it. The Orioles did have a surprise month in April. Like they were actually at points were in first place. They didn't last long, but they were in first place.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just kind of keeping up with the injury bug in the month of April, Darren O'Day went on the 10-day IL with the rotator cuff injury. That was supposed to be a relatively quick one. We would get him back later in the year. And this is also when Aaron Hicks's just injury bug throughout the year started. He had some day-to-day injuries throughout the next few months. We all know this all led up to a pretty big injury for him later on in the year. That was when Gio went out for COVID, or the COVID vaccine, I should say. Aaron Judge had some injuries. Gary had some injuries. All of these players were missing them for some days. So that definitely contributed to the slowness of our offense. And then
they were also not in the lineup every day. It wasn't like we were playing Judge, he might have not went on the IL, but he was always dealing with a little injury. Like they wouldn't play him every day. I remember they didn't put him in a Orioles game after he hit two home runs. And he was like, okay, at that point, the Yankees offense was still kind of sluggish. And that was like our first true sign of the Yankee offense kind of coming together with Judge having a big game. And then they sat him.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely a lot of concerns going into the month of May. We obviously fell back in the standings there. We knew we had to have a big month. And the Yankees came out, and to their credit, they went 17-11, 600 winning percentage. That's not really where we want the team to be. We want to be a little bit better than that. But that
was a step in the right direction.
Yeah, definitely a step in the right direction. It was a great month leading up until the the Tiger series to end the month, where we got swept in four games by the Detroit Tigers. You turn that around into a Yankee sweep like it should have been, and you go, what, 21-7 for that month? That's a great month. That's exactly what we need to do after a slow series. That month, we did sweep the White Sox. We did win 2 out of 3 against the Astros, 2 out of 3 against the Rays. So we definitely did some damage against the good teams that month. And we're really taking care of business until that Tiger series, which I think really was just a shot to a lot of Yankees fans. We were like, oh, we're right back in this. We're having a great year. And then when you get swept by the Tigers in a 4-game set, I don't really think you can feel anything but sadness.
It was a 3-game swept set, Ryan.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Yep. We played the Rays next day. Yeah.
So we had a very bad April. We were under 500. In May, we kind of got our footing together. We also had that no-hitter by Corey Kluber in the Texas series. So we were kind of riding high. We're like, okay, we're back. We still didn't lead the division, but we're getting inching closer. And you're like, okay, I could see it all coming together now. Mm-hmm. The Yankees pitching really turned the corner. Their offense still was kind of sluggish, but you felt good going into that Tiger series. You felt good. I was like, okay, this is an easy sweep. We should take care of business. It just, like I said before, we just wouldn't put our foot down and just finish off series. Like, in this month, we still didn't get too many sweeps. Like, we were still content just winning series. We were winning series, but we didn't quite finish them.
Yeah.
And that was the annoying part. And that Tiger series, we got swept. The first game, we lost, and this is probably the theme of the Yankees' first half, was just a heartbreaking loss. We lost. Justin Wilson gives up a home run. We lose the game, which we should have won. The umpire should have struck out the last hitter.
Oh, it was a strike. Yep. Yeah. And it's brutal. And to reinforce it yet again, the injury bug, this is the month that we lost Corey Kluber up until he's still out now. He had a shoulder injury. We lost Aaron Hicks for the year with his wrist injury. We had Glaber out for COVID. Gio had a knee injury. Roofnut Odor went on the 10-day IL. This is when we lost Darren O'Day. And
Hoyt was still not back at this point, correct?
I think he came back during May, but then got hurt again with the oblique injury.
Okay.
So he came back and then went right back on the IL. And that kind of, we kind of stumbled, as we mentioned, with that sweep to the Rays or Tigers. We kind of stumble into the month of June, and it really didn't get any better from there. We went 12-14 yet again in the month of June. I think I can speak for all Yankees fans. I know, especially with Jatinder, as we talk throughout the year, this is kind of when things really started to set in. Like, if we don't do something, we might not make the playoffs this year. Mm-hmm. And normal, like, if everyone likes to say Yankees fans are spoiled, I understand that the Yankees win a lot. I understand that we almost always make the playoffs. So if we don't make it one year, we don't deserve to complain or whatever. But with our team, we have the second highest payroll in baseball, I believe. We have a good team. There's no reason this team shouldn't make the playoffs. So that's why everyone's upset. In 2016, when we didn't make the playoffs, we were like, okay, like, we're rebuilding. We traded off a lot of our big pieces. This is fine. But this year, we're in our championship window. Mm-hmm. It's not acceptable to miss the playoffs.
I thought we had a team that could win the pennant and even win the World Series.
Yeah.
So being under 500 in that month, and that was coming. So we lost against the Tigers, got swept. And then we also got swept against the Red Sox the first time we played them. And at that point, the Red Sox looked like a powerhouse. I did not see it coming at all.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw in there, definitely 2018 flashbacks of the Red Sox starting with that ridiculous stretch that they had. And just, it looked like they were unstoppable. And when you see a Red Sox team, in 2018, it was the same story. We didn't think they were going to be a top team in the league, but for some reason, the Red Sox sometimes they just decide to put it all together, and it seems like their whole roster is having a career year, and that's how it looked early in the season.
Mm-hmm. we just had some brutal losses. Looking at the schedule, we had the Phillies. We came back after being down, what, 6 runs?
Yeah.
And then we end up losing that game. And it was like, that could have been a real, like, statement game for us. You were like, okay, we're down, but we come back and just kind of get on a roll. We just couldn't get out of our own way, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that literally I think the game before that Phillies game was the Twins game in which we had – I can't quite remember if it was tied going into the ninth or we had the lead.
I do remember.
And then Chapman comes in, blows it, gives up that home run to Nelson Cruz to end the game. And I wish I could say that was the worst loss of the year, because any given year that should be up there.
I don't think that's even ranks in the top five this year.
Yeah, I think Yankees fans this year forget that that even happened, because there were so many awful losses following that. And like you said, lost 2 games against the Phillies, should have won one of them. And then we followed up with a sweep to the Blue Jays. That's kind of like the first half of the season was like, what is this team? Are they good? Are they bad? We win a series against a good team, then we lose one against a bad team, and then we get swept by a good team. And it was just, there was no consistency. The offense was on, then it was off. And then later in that month, we get swept by the Red Sox again.
The Twin series, our offense still at this point has not like clicked. Like we'll have moments of it, but that Twin series looked like, wow, we might take off with our offense, because we won the first 2 games. I think we put up how many runs? We put up like 9. We put 8 runs on the first game and then 9 runs in the second game. So it looked like our offense was coming together. It seemed like the Twins, we historically owned, so it's like, okay, this came at the perfect moment. We were kind of spiraling. We lost to the Red Sox, we lost against the Tigers, but it was like, okay, here we go, we have the Twins coming up. This will kind of reboot our team. So we win the first 2 games, and then Chapman blows it in the final game. It was 5-4, and then Chapman blows it, gives up a bomb to Nelson Cruz to end it. So we once again couldn't finish off series. I think that was just the big part about the Yankees. They just couldn't finish off series.
Yeah, and it's just a reoccurring theme all year, and getting swept by the Red Sox again to start the year 0-6 against the Red Sox is just it's just not what you want. And then to end the
at that point, Boone put out a statement after that second sweep against the Red Sox. They said, this is our season, like this is make or break against the Angels series.
Yeah,
and
I think
he didn't put Judge or Gio in the lineup after making that statement.
Yep, I think he said something along the lines of the season is on the line here. And you don't put, at this point in the season, Judge and Gio were our best hitters by far. DJ was having an awful year. Glaber was having an awful year. Gary, I think this is around the time that Gary started to hit a little bit better. Awful.
And first base and center field was still a black hole without Hicks and Boyd.
And we have Stanton, which has been having a great year. He was having a good year at that point too, but we all know Stanton. He's very streaky. Some games he's just absolutely lost. So you need your players like Judge and Gio, who you know can contribute. They're going to be consistent. And we said both of them. I remember texting Jatinder when that lineup came out, just laughing about the fact that Boone said that and then sits our two best offensive players or our two most consistent offensive players. And it just, that was the point in the season where it was really like, okay, if we don't make the playoffs this year, and I'm still kind of thinking it now that we're in a playoff spot, like, I don't know if I want Boone back next year, because at that point in the year, I don't know if it's the nerds saying, hey, this is the lineup you're putting out, these are the moves you're making during the game, blah, blah, blah. But there was just no urgency. It felt like there was no need to put out your best lineup every day. This point in the year, it was switching the lineup every day. Judge would be 2-3, then 4. Gary would be second one day and then seventh the next day. And it was just, there was just no consistency.
It was bad. Like, I remember going into that series, we just got swept by the Red Sox. So it's like, okay, this is a must win against the Angels. And then Boone sits them. I'm like, he said it was a must-win series, yeah, and we don't play them, and it was ridiculous.
Yeah, and
I so the I think the Twins might have been the first really tough game to end the month. Wow, was that a way to end a game? They lost 8-11 to the Angels.
Yeah, just another instance of Aroldis Chapman, yeah, absolutely imploding. Another one of the worst losses of the year.
We were up 8-3 going into the ninth. 8-3. Yeah. I went to that game actually. Mm-hmm. We had Shohei was pitching. The Yankees put up 7 runs against Shohei in the first inning. So he was the pitcher. So they lose their hitter, and yep, we knocked out Shohei. So it was like a big win for us. We expect to win. The game gets delayed in like the fifth inning. I was expecting it to be a rain-shortened win.
Uh-huh.
I left the game because it was already raining, and then we had a second rain delay. So I was like, there's no way they're going to restart the game. I get home at, I think, 11 o'clock, and they say they're going to restart the game at 11:30. So I'm like, okay, I'll watch the ending of this game. We're up 8-3. They give up 7 runs in the ninth.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, thank God I didn't wait 2 hours in the rain for this, because this was like, I couldn't believe it. And this was Chapman at that point. Up until the Twin series, looked unhittable.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to mention. I almost forgot about how dominant Chapman was to begin the year. I think, what was it, like his first like 20-something innings, he didn't give up a single run, and his K rate was out of this world. His splitter, the new pitcher this year, looked unhittable, and it seemed like nothing was going to stop him. He was in the Cy Young talks at that point in the year because of how good he was. He was having a Zach Britton 2015-esque season.
I think even better, just yeah, because of his strikeouts. And like, he wasn't giving up hits either. Like, not about runs, but he wasn't giving up hits.
Yeah, and I think unlike Buck Showalter in that season for the Orioles, Zach Britton would have come in the playoffs when it mattered. Aroldis Chapman would have come in the playoffs when it mattered. So,
and he was kind of like coming into the season, we were like, should Chapman be our closer? I think after that 2 months, I think we were like, he was the best closer. He was the best closer.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, we was like, do you trust him to end this game? Hell yeah. It was like video game numbers.
Yeah, insane. And then not even 2 weeks later, we have no faith in him to close anything. He couldn't close a jar of cookies if we asked him to. It was awful. And then just to kind of, again, recap how our injuries went that month, you would think after everything we've gone through this year, okay, maybe June will be a light month. Maybe it'll get a little bit healthier, kind of rebound. No. Just to list off some of these names: Aaron Judge, Gleyber Torres, Gio, Wandy Peralta, Zach Britton, Clint Frazier. All of these guys. Clint Frazier went on the 60-day DL. Zach Britton, we all know, he got hurt again. We lost him for a while. Wandy Peralta, which at that point, we were like, I don't care if he gets hurt. He's been awful this year. At that point, he went on a 10-day IL. And then all the players I listed before, Judge, Gleyber, and Gio, they all went day-to-day. But we know with the Yankees team, that means they probably missed however many games. It's just, again, for another year, the injuries have just been killing us. And we roll into July, just not a good team, not in a good spot, not healthy.
Back-to-back series was just heartbreaking. We got swept by the Red Sox and then lost 2 of 3 to the Angels.
Yeah, and I think we all know what's next, the Mets series.
So I have a interesting story. So July 4th is probably the lowest point of the Yankees season.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
They were 41-40 after losing to the Mets. It was a doubleheader. So the first game dropped them to 41-40.
No, that dropped us to 41-41.
Oh, really? Oh, that's right. I went to that first game. We were winning. Mm-hmm. We were winning that game. The crowd was kind of dead. Mm-hmm. It was kind of interesting because I've never seen a Yankee-Mets game be so silent. Yankee fans didn't start like making some noise until they started scoring some runs. But we were up in that game. And then Chapman starts warming up to close the game. I remember my friend who is a Mets fan, he was like, oh, time for Chapman to blow it. And I was like, yeah, probably. And he actually, in fact, does blow it. And then Mets fans take over the stadium. Like you could hear them. And then like, even once we lose the game, Mets fans are like, let's go Mets, let's go Mets. And that was probably the angriest I've ever been at a baseball game. I remember just thinking, I was like, we suck. We're not making the playoffs. I was like, I remember we had another series against the Mets, but I was like, oh my God, just you wait and see. Cause it was so annoying how the Mets fans just took over the game. I was like, I can't wait to meet them. And we just knocked them out of the season. But I had no hope that was going to happen. Like, I was just thinking, I was like, I would hope this would happen. But like, that was my inner dialogue. I had no faith in this team to go anywhere.
Yeah. I think I remember that day I was at a little gathering for the 4th of July. And I was just keeping up with the game on my phone. And I saw that we took the lead. And this was a doubleheader, so obviously the stupid 7-inning games. Mm-hmm. Going into the 7th inning, I see Chapman coming in. I'm like, up to this point, I was like, I mean, he's blown a few, but it's still Chapman. He can get us through this. We got to win this game. And then he blew it. But I was just like, of course. Like, I'm not even surprised anymore. At that point, we're 41-41. We are 10 games. I believe it was 10. It was either 10 or 10 and a half behind the division-leading Boston Red Sox at this point. And I'm not even going to go over the Yankees July total record because we all know this month was a story of two sections. It was two stories leading up to the All-Star break. We took that series against the Mariners 2 out of 3. Obviously, we know in the third game, Logan Gilbert just, I don't know. He just looked filthy. He's a top prospect. Nothing you can really do. Like, this team should be able to hit him, but he looked disgusting. And then we go into the Astros game or Astros series. So we win the first two. They don't score a run in the first two games. We're feeling great. We're like, oh, just lost a series to the Mets. We're in a bad spot, but we win the Mariners series.
Perfect way to end the half, though. We're like, we haven't put it all together, but if we could get a sweep against the Astros and kind of regroup at the All-Star break, feeling good, and then we could kind of adjust. It felt good. And also, we won the first two games. Gerrit Cole pitched a complete game shutout in the second game of the series.
He shoved against the Astros. That was the best game I've ever seen him pitch. The boys got their celebration with Rougned Odor with the jacket, and because it's chilly in here that Aaron Judge started to mock Jose Altuve. That was awesome. We had our thing. We were playing well. Our pitching was amazing. And then we get to game three. It's looking great. We're up big. We're going into the 9th. Chad Green comes in. And
we were up, 7-2 going into the 9th?
Yeah, I believe so. And we're like, okay, we're not pitching Chapman. Good. He doesn't deserve it. He lost the closer role at this point. Chad Green comes in. He's looked pretty good this year. And we're like, there's no way. That was for Mon that started
it was, day. Yeah. So Tyone started that game, pitched great. He's like in the middle of, he still hasn't started that stretch where he's been insane, but this was kind of like the start of that stretch. Mm-hmm. And then Herman came in relief because I think, was he injured at that point?
Yeah, I think he was just coming off injury.
Yeah. So they were trying to give him a 3-inning save, just kind of like build up, but like he kind of got, he pitched 2 innings clean, and then that 9th inning, he got into trouble. So Chad Green came in a mess, but did Green.
Yeah, I mean, this was one of those Boone, what are you doing situations, because Chad Green right out the gate was just getting hit hard. I think I think they had two doubles, maybe one really hard single, but I remember right after they had a deep double that was almost out. And I was like, okay, take Chad Green out. He doesn't have it. They're seeing him well. They're hitting it hard. Jose Altuve is coming up. And he just didn't. He leaves Chad Green in there like typical Aaron Boone up to this point in the season. And I think everyone, when Jose Altuve stepped up to the plate with a chance to walk it off, I think everyone knew it was going to happen. For some reason.
On this day, they were giving the Astros were they all series. They were giving away like memorabilia. Like they gave out like their ALCS championship rings and like, flag. On this last game, they were giving all Jose Altuve jersey replica.
Yeah.
So it was his replica day.
Yeah. And I think everyone knew it was going to happen. We all know what happened. He hits a walk off and then rips off his shirt, which I personally think that just makes it a worse look for him. Why are you willing to rip off your shirt in a regular season game when you wouldn't do it when you just sent your team to the World Series? Like that doesn't make sense. You see his tattoo that he was quote unquote trying to hide. It's the size of a peanut. I'm not sure what he was trying to hide, but whatever, buzzer or not, he walked us off. Even though we just beat them in a series, it felt like we just got swept 10 times over.
Mm-hmm.
Last game going to the All-Star break.
I think at that point, the way I would recap the Yankees season would be underperformance and heartbreak. Like that, that's how I would recap it. It was like,
And we're however many games, probably like 8 or 9 games back from the Red Sox at that point. We're not in a wild card spot. It's the season's bad. It's starting to look really bad because you can start slow, but you have to turn it around at some point. And this team was showing no signs of consistently turning it around. That brings us to the All-Star break.
Actually, going back to that Mets game on July 4th, though, we split the doubleheader.
Yeah.
So that put our record at 42-41.
Mm-hmm.
Our Pythagorean win-loss percentage at that point, so we're a game over 500. Yeah. Our Pythagorean win-loss percentage was 485. So we were technically playing like better than we were supposed to.
Which
like
is
our
insane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we had no faith that they could turn it around because they have not shown it. Like other than the back of their baseball cards, haven't seen anything in this season to show that they could do it because their offense was super inconsistent. Their bullpen, which was a major strength early in the season, was starting to blow it. We didn't know who could save games. It went from Chapman being unhittable to, okay, I think now Chad Green's the closer and then he blows it. Yeah. And then the next guy up was Loaisiga, who took a big step this season. But you're going to see later on when he gets the closer spot, he also blew it. So we were
we
didn't know who was going to close games.
So I think it's important to remember the July 6th date. I think a lot of Yankees fans that pay attention to Twitter, pay attention to really anything. If you watch the games, it's said countless times now. That July 6th date is important because, as we all know, the Yankees have the best record in baseball since that date. But the crazy thing is, if you think back to going into the All-Star break, you don't think of that 6-2 or 4-2 stretch against the Mariners and Astros like a win because of that Astros game.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of was the turning point of our season. And coming out of the All-Star break, we have go straight into a supposed to be 4-game set against the Red Sox. We all know this is when we lost, 5 players to COVID. We lost Gio, Higgy, Judge. That was later. We lost Gio.
No, it was after the All-Star break. Cole got COVID.
That wasn't this set though. We lost two relief. Mm-hmm. We lost Nestor.
And Wandy Peralta, I think.
Nestor, right? Wandy Peralta. I think there was someone else that was on it for a while that started all of this. But yeah, we lost Nestor, Wandy Peralta, Judge, Gio, and Higgy all at the same time, the same day, all with COVID. We thought there's no chance we're coming back if we don't have these players. We have 4 games up against the Red Sox, 8 games in 10 days, mm-hmm. and we're missing some of our biggest players.
That was make or break for our season. At this point, we still didn't believe it, but it was like, this is going to sink our season. You know, this 10-day matchup, like, we faced the Red Sox. So if we had any chance, we needed to win those series. And we were already missing our big guys.
Yeah, and we all know first game got canceled because of all the COVID. We didn't even know if the series would get played, but it did. Mm-hmm. We start off that series 0-4. And then I like to take some pride into this because that weekend I was in New York City with my girlfriend and we were going to a podcast show that she likes. And I noticed that we were playing the Red Sox. We were there on Friday and Saturday. And we originally planned to leave Saturday morning, but I was like, hey, like, do you want to go to the Red Sox game on Saturday? I've never been to a Yankees Red Sox game. I live in Vermont, so I don't get to go to Yankees games all the time. And luckily she said yes, because she's the best. And we got to go to that Saturday game on August 17th against the Red Sox. Now, this leading up to this, I've been 2-0 in my life going to Yankees games. They've won both games. I just must be good luck. But they win that game 3-1. It was a 1-1 game. It got rained out. Really, it was odd.
A complete game, right?
Because that day, we get to the ballpark, and it was raining all day before, and it stopped, and they delayed the game for an hour to an hour and a half. I don't quite remember exactly when it started, but it did not rain once during the entire delay that they had. So if they didn't delay it, they probably could have played a full game, but it worked out for us. Garrett Cole shoves for 6 innings. He gave up a run early, but then really hunkered down, pitched throughout it. And I remember it being tied 1-1 going into the bottom of the 5th. And then Gary comes up, hits an absolute wall scraper to opposite field. Crowd goes crazy. Best atmosphere I've been to as a Yankees fan at Yankee Stadium in a rainout game. But the crowd was electric. And then Glaber follows it up, back-to-back home runs. It was awesome. Game gets canceled next inning. We win the game. This was a huge game for us. We were like, there's no way we can beat this hot Red Sox team without some of our best players. We go on to win the next game 9-1. And we're like, okay, like something cool is going on. Greg Allen, just this is when he started to light it up. Tyler Wade, I guess, somehow figured out how to play baseball. And we had speed. We had a different look of baseball. It was awesome.
Completely different team. Because at that point, the Yankees were slow. They didn't steal. I think they were
last in stolen bases going into the All-Star break.
And then you get Greg Allen, who, like I said, center field was like a black hole.
Yep.
Like, we didn't – Gardner was taking over center field while Hicks was hurt, but he wasn't doing anything. Like, it was terrible. And then Greg Allen was like a breath of fresh air. Like, he's a switch hitter, and he's also hitting, and he's also stealing. Like, it really, like, breathed new life into the Yankees lineup.
Yeah, and we went on to win that series, and we went on to finish that month, let's see, 9-4 for the rest of that month. And
but there was a very important stretch before the trade deadline. We had a 4-game series against the Red Sox, which we lost 3 out of 4. So that could have so that series going into it, the Yankees were kind of on a little bit of a surge.
Yep.
We knew, like, if the Yankees were going to make deadline moves, we felt like they needed to play good against the Red Sox, and then that could show the front office that they're capable. You should bring in guys to, like, go for it.
Yeah, and I think there was a point where Brian Cashman said, I'm not going to buy into this team if the current roster doesn't perform. Because, I mean, I guess it makes sense from Brian Cashman's point of view. You can't put a diamond on top of a pile of poop and have it come out to be good. Like, you need the foundation that you have to at least be playing sound baseball to make it a contender. He's not going to buy in to just make the team a fringe playoff team. He's going to buy in to make this a World Series contender.
Mm-hmm.
So we really had to do well in this stretch.
We lost that series against Boston before the trade deadline, 3-4. But we should have won that series. Yeah. It was yet another heartbreaking series.
Yeah.
Herman was pitching a no-hitter, and then our bullpen blows it.
Yeah, I think that the first and last game of that series were both 100% winnable games that we blew. Obviously, the third game, the one that we did win, we came from behind. That was a nice change of pace. Everyone thought we're going to carry that momentum into the last game, split the series. We're looking okay. And then we just blow it again. And then that brings us in.
That first game I want to talk about. Yep. Trisky. Oh, my God. Like, he couldn't throw the ball.
So was that the game where he threw the most wild pitches?
Yeah. They scored two runs without, like, getting a base hit.
Yeah. And that was... Yeah, and that brings us into the last game, series.
Actually, that reminds me. So that game, we were actually winning. We tried to stay away from Chapman, and I think it was another close. Let me look at the box score, because I remember the Yankees blew it in the ninth.
Okay, yeah, Chad
I think
Green
we were
blew it.
We were trying to stay away from Loaisca and Chapman because they pitched. Boone doesn't like to pitch guys multiple games in a row, but once Chad Green blew it, this was a, like we said, this was a must-win game because you needed to show the front office that we are contenders, we can win this game. And then he puts Trisky in the bottom of the 10th to try to save the game for us. It was 4-3. We were winning 4-3.
Yep.
And then you put I was like, you have to put Chapman or Loaisca to win this game because this is a must-win. The Red Sox were ahead of us in the division. At this point, I think, were the Red Sox still in first place or were they like a couple games behind Tampa?
I want to say they were still in first, but it's a toss-up. They were definitely really close at that point.
Yeah.
But
actually, what day was this?
July 22nd.
I'm going to look it up.
And while you look that up, I'll just kind of recap the Rays series. Mm-hmm. It was the last series going into the trade deadline.
Boston was one game over Tampa at this point. Okay. They were 59-38. Tampa was 58-39.
Yeah. So going into the Rays series, we just lost a heartbreaker to the Red Sox. Like, we didn't know if we were going to get anything meaningful at that trade deadline. I remember we were talking and we were like, I wouldn't be shocked if we didn't get anything. Like, we need stuff. This team can still contend. But at that point, they were barely even deserving of it. And we go into the Rays series, and I believe it was that Wednesday, maybe, we find out the absolute bomb that we've traded for Joey Gallo. And that, I think that kind of excited every Yankees fan. Well, maybe not everyone, because there's haters that think Joey Gallo isn't good at baseball for some reason. But, yeah, what were you going to say?
Before that, the Rays acquired Nelson Cruz. Yep. So they were going for the division. They acquired Nelson Cruz. And at that point, the Yankees still haven't made any deadline moves. And we weren't sure if they were going to do anything. Yeah. And then getting that Joey Gallo news, it was like, oh, my God. Like the Yankees lineup was so right-handed heavy. So to get a lefty bat was huge. And also, Joey Gallo is a really good fielder.
Yeah. And I think also we can't forget about the man, Clay Holmes. We did trade for him at that point. We didn't really know what to expect.
I remember being upset about that trade, though. And the reason why was that Park. We designated Park. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we definitely – I was a little upset about that, too. There wasn't really a spot for him, so in hindsight, that trade does make sense. And also, we traded Sessa and Justin Wilson to the Reds, which I – looking
that was
back,
kind of
– we didn't need to do it. Because Cashman was able to stay under the threshold with all the other trades. But I think we all thought it was to make some salary room, which
we thought,
I guess,
it was a precursor
sense, but...
for bigger trades. Because we was like, in a vacuum, it makes no sense. Because Sessa also took a big step for the Yankees. I remember a couple of years ago, like every time he came into the game, I was like, oh, this guy. Like he was going to blow it.
He's the Nick Nelson of that point.
The Yankees actually do a really good job of like developing relievers, though. That's something that they've always been good at.
And I think Matt Blake has really helped with pitchers in general since we've gotten him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but to just to kind of speed through the rest of the time up until today, that Rays series, obviously we went 2 out of 3, but we lost that game 14-0 to end it. Abreu gave up 6 runs without getting a single out. Gerrit Cole gave up 9. It wasn't awesome, but we knew we had Joey Gallo coming. And I believe it was on the 29th. No, maybe it was. Yeah, I think it was on the 29th or the 30th that we traded. I think this shocked everyone. I had no idea we were even thinking about Rizzo, but we traded for Anthony Rizzo. And we got Rizzo and Gallo without giving up any of our top prospects, and we didn't pay either of them anything. The teams took on their whole salaries. And also with Gallo, we got Joely Rodriguez, which has been pretty good so far. So that's a win. And then Anthony Rizzo.
So we acquired Rizzo the day before the trade deadline, which an important thing to note was that the Red Sox were in on him.
Yes.
Like he was most connected to the Red Sox. So I had no idea the Yankees were even considering Rizzo. But those two trades felt like it was huge because it changed their lineup.
Yeah, it's a seismic shift to the lineup.
Mm-hmm. Like we got two lefties, and then Rizzo, I really liked Rizzo because I thought he was a perfect fit for the Yankees. He's a lefty and he's a platinum gold glover, which really helps the Yankees defense.
Yeah, not only did we get two lefties, we got two all-star lefties, we got two great hitting lefties, and we got two gold glove defense lefties. That at first base and outfield are two positions that we didn't have defense. It was just non-existent. We had Clint Frazier and Miggy playing left field for the season until they got hurt. They're both abysmal. Brett Gardner's not what he used to be. We needed someone like Joey Gallo. And we also got Anthony Rizzo, which... him versus Voit on defense, it's a laughing stock. Like there's no comparison. It's not even close. Rizzo's the best first baseman defensively, has been for a while, and we've already seen it pay dividends for us. It's back to the Mark Teixeira vibes of if you throw it within a 50-mile radius of him, he'll somehow catch it and somehow stay on the base, which we just didn't have for years.
Yeah, it saves our infielder so many errors. It's like Odor would be playing third base now, but like Gio, Glaber, when they're playing, like they could sometimes throw it away. You're saved, and it just doesn't cause that big inning. It seems like the Yankees would always have big innings because it's either like they start the inning with a walk or an error, and it just seems like all those runs always come in to score.
Yeah, and.
And then Rizzo immediately paid off, though, because we played the Marlins after we acquired him.
Yeah. And then that leads us into Andrew Heaney, which, that happened. We traded for him. Cashman liked him. The nerds liked him for some reason. Has good underlings, I guess. But I don't think many people expected much from it. It's a fifth starter, something we needed with our injuries.
I thought it was more of a depth piece. Like I looked at his underlying stats. I was like, okay, there's something there. Like he does have good stuff, but he seemed to be homer prone. Like
he's a soft throwing fly ball pitcher.
And then I really just thought it was a depth piece because I was like, guys were, like I said, COVID was ravishing us.
Yeah.
But it was like, no one really paid attention to this move thinking that was it. I think going into the July 30th, Yankees had hopes for a better pitcher. Like we were thinking like a Barrios.
Yeah.
I think that was in play.
I think him with Voit involved in that trade was definitely something that Brian Cashman was trying to push heavy. But I mean, looking at what the Twins got from the Blue Jays for him, Austin Martin and Simeon Woods Richardson, I am very happy we didn't make that trade because we would have had to give up something huge. Those two players were the top two prospects in the Blue Jays system. That's like us trading. I mean, it's not quite the same, I don't think, as Dominguez and Volpe because I think they're a little bit more high tier than those two. But like, that's still a huge trade that I'm glad we didn't make.
Austin Martin looked like he might be the best player of the 2020 draft.
Yeah.
And he was a Vanderbilt guy. Like, he looks like he could hit. So, like, yeah. They gave up a lot to get Barrios.
Yeah, so that leads us into that Marlins series. As we know, the Italians just took over Yankee land. Anthony Rizzo started off huge. Yeah.
Do you know Joe Gallo?
I told you this.
The mobster?
Yeah.
So, okay. But I don't know.
You can tell everyone else.
Okay. Yeah. So Joey Gallo, like, I think he has some definitely mob connections. Either than, like, obviously his name is a mobster name. But let me just go on his Wikipedia real quick. Just, I want to get this story right. He is of Italian descent. Gallo's father, Tony, is the son of Italian immigrants from Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, New York. Do you know Bensonhurst? Do you know that history? So that's a big time, like, that's, it's overrun with mobsters. And then they also went to Vegas. He went to Vegas, which is also has mob connections. Like, the mob built out Las Vegas. Yeah. So, like, I'm not saying Joey Gallo has connections to the mob, but I am saying he has connections to the mob.
And for all of you that don't know the Joe Gallo thing, there was a New York mobster by the name of Joe Gallo. So that kind of furthers that whole theory. But as we all know, Anthony Rizzo just lit it up in that Marlins series. Mm-hmm. He played awesome. We swept the series.
He was kind of our whole source of our offense for that series, because the Yankees were winning. They swept the Marlins, but they weren't scoring a lot of runs. And Gallo kind of was that source of all those runs.
Yep. And that was kind of, I think when we swept that series, we were like, wait a second, we might have done something here. Like, this team
looks
is back. Yeah. Like, this is a whole new team now. We're still stealing bases. Leading up until today, where we've stolen more bases than any team in baseball since the All-Star break, which I don't even think has been conceivable for the Yankees since 2017. So that's awesome to see. And then we go into the Orioles series, and we got blown out the first game, which, I mean, it
sucks.
It was a downer. Yeah, we got to beat the Orioles, but then we blew them out the next two games like you're supposed to do. We go into the Mariners, win 3 out of 4.
And the Mariners at that point were ahead of us. No, I think, I guess we just moved ahead of them in the wild card spot, but we were within like one game of the Mariners. The Mariners were one game behind us in the wild card. So it had wild card implications.
Yeah. And I think this was also my birthday weekend. Just a little shout out for me. I went to the game on Friday and Saturday against the Mariners, brought my lifetime record at Yankees games up to 5-0. So if anyone wants to start a GoFundMe for season tickets and a private jet for me to go to every game, I'd be very interested. But they won both of those games, win 3 out of 4 in that series. That's huge. Go into the Royals, win 2 out of 3. And then we're going to stop our recap of this season here at the Field of Dreams game. And episode 2, we'll kind of go over all of the games from the Field of Dreams up until today. That's kind of where were we at heading to Field of Dreams. We just made a roaring comeback within, and at that point we were a few games back from the wild card. Everything was looking awesome. We just separated ourselves from the Mariners. The Blue Jays were on our heels, but we were right there knocking on the door of the wild card. At this point, the Red Sox have just started a free fall since the trade deadline. They didn't get anything except Kyle Schwarber and Austin Davis, whoever that is. No one cares. And so, we were right there knocking on door for the wild card.
So I just want to just put that in. So the Red Sox at that point, like you said, were free-falling. They were second in the division, 5 games behind Tampa. And then the Yankees were right next to Boston, 2 games behind them. So at the Yankees' lowest point, we were 10 games behind.
Yeah.
And now we're 2 games behind. And we're really starting to feel something. Like, we're like, the trade deadline was like, we got reinforcements. This felt like a different team. And then we're immediately winning. And the Red Sox It's a complete 180 between the Yankees and Red Sox. The Yankees are winning and the Red Sox are losing.
Yeah. And at that point, since the All-Star break, we've won 7 out of 8 series. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking great.
We're 2 games behind the Red Sox for the second wild card spot, and then mm-hmm. 4 games behind Oakland for the top wild card spot. So we're doing good, but we're still on the outside looking in. Like, yeah, we feel good about our team, but if the season ended today, we're not in the playoffs.
Yeah. And it's also important to mention that Marlins game, we did play Giancarlo Stanton in the field for the first mm-hmm. time in mm-hmm. 85 years. he's familiar with Marlins Park, so it was a good place to put him in there. He looked good. And I think it's worth mentioning, since Giancarlo Stanton started playing the field, he's looked way better. And when I pulled the numbers a few days ago, I think going into the Angels game, he was, since playing the field for the first time in the Marlins game, he's been hitting .288, .403 OBP, .462 slugging for an .865 OPS. That's awesome. Like, mm-hmm. I think him playing the field is really good for him, because that really, it loosens him out. He's not dwelling on all of his hitting mistakes. He's not all stiff, because when you're that big with that much muscle, you got to get everything loose. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great idea playing him. You can't play scared all the time, just not playing him in the outfield so he doesn't get hurt. Mm-hmm. I think willing to put him in the outfield is huge.
You know how I know he's in a good stretch is that he's been taking his walks. Usually yep. he'll just strike out on a breaking ball, like 20 feet outside, but yeah, he's taking those pitches now, which means he's locked in.
Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now. Like Jacinder said, going to that Field of Dreams game, we're 2 games back from the wild card. We're really storming. We're looking great, looking like a whole new team. Make sure to tune in for episode 2 to kind of get the recap since then. Obviously, we all know a lot happened in the last week and a half of Yankees baseball, but I think we kind of want to stop the recap there and then move into a little bit of minor league recap, just to kind of give everyone that may not know what's going on with the Yankees farm system just a little brief overview. I think I want to start. I know Jason Dominguez and Anthony Volpe are really fun, really exciting, but I think it's important to mention Davey Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a lot of Yankees fans that maybe only watch the major leagues and pay attention to the major leagues saw Davey last year. He looked pretty good.
He started a playoff game, and I remember we was like, he felt really good, and it was against the Rays, I believe, right? They yeah. had him started, and then they got a little too cute. I felt they got
oh,
a little...
that's, yes.
they put Jay Happ. Yeah. So I was really mad about that, because he looked good in that game, and then they took him out, and then Happ immediately gives up runs.
Yeah. I think everyone expected him to come back to the majors in 2021 and kind of build on what he said what he did last year, and really make a case for even a potential rookie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know, Davey Garcia has taken about 50,000 steps back in 2021. He's currently sitting at a 7.08 ERA in AAA, mm-hmm. which I mean, in 17 games started, that's just not good. He's averaging, I think, 3 to 4 innings a start because of how bad he's doing.
I don't know if, do you remember when Severino in his second year, he was really terrible and there was a lot of noise about putting Severino in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. I never really bought into that, but I might believe Devi might be a better reliever than starter at this point. But he doesn't have reliever stuff because he doesn't overpower you.
I don't think I agree. I think Davey has what it takes to be a good starter, but I read an article that they've completely changed the type of pitcher Davey is. We all know his curveball was.
He's shown flashes. He's shown flashes awesome. Last year. Yeah.
And and they've changed him into more of a sidearm slot, not quite sidearm, but they've definitely moved his arm slot down and introduced the slider. And now he's kind of just a horizontal slider type pitcher. And he's relying on his fastball a lot more, which is not his best pitch. His best pitch is a curveball. He needs to pitch off of that. And he's just not. And I don't know who is responsible for this change or why it happened, but it obviously isn't working at all. And now we don't know what to expect from him in the future. I don't know if he's going to go back to his old way of pitching or if this is just a new Sevy and he's no longer a top prospect for us.
Yeah, he went at the beginning of the year. What was his ranking?
Third, I think.
And then now he's 11.
Yeah.
So that's a big fall, especially for a guy that I thought could have broken into the rotation. Especially, I said I wanted a 6-man rotation. I thought him and Clark Schmidt might fill a role in that spot.
But yeah. And then just like an update on Clark Schmidt, there's not really a ton to update on him because he has been hurt most of the year. He just started a rehab assignment. I think it's been going okay.
I think he pitched like 3 innings now.
Yeah. He pitched 6 innings in Somerset, but it's nothing really to report on for him just because of injuries. And then another guy we've known for a long time, Florial. Obviously, he just hasn't broken out in the majors yet. He played, we've seen him this year up at the majors. He played pretty well. He can hit the ball hard. He's fast. He can field the ball. But they're just, I guess they just don't believe in him to give him consistent at-bats at this point, which at some point you have to or you have to trade him. He's just been kind of fringe AAA MLB guy. He hasn't really lit up AAA. So I think that's
a lot of tools.
Yeah. I think
he has a lot of tools. And like I've seen him in the majors, he looked good. But in the minors, he just hasn't put it together.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
it's really weird.
Yeah. In the minors, he has a 600 and like a 686 OPS, which that's if you're hitting 686 OPS in AAA, you're probably not ready to be in the majors. But yeah, so that's kind of an update on him. And then I think the two golden gems that everyone knows about at this point in the Yankees farm system, we got Jason Dominguez and Anthony Volpe. Jason, the Martian, this is his first year of professional baseball. Should have been last year, but COVID ruined that. He's looked okay. I think his inexperience is definitely showing this year. From a lot of what I've seen, he has a really tough time with the up and away pitches. He has a strikeout issue at this point. He has shown glimpses of like having a good eye, being a good hitter. He's fast. He can field, but I think he needs time. Obviously he's only 18 years old. But he is our number two prospect at this point, was number one prospect going into the season. But at the mid-year rankings through MLB Pipeline, he is at 15. Or no, he's 17, I think.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think he's 17.
Yeah.
But he's number two, not because he fell. I think this next guy just really shocked us at how much he rose.
Yeah, Dominguez started the year, I believe, at like further down in the list, and now he is up to 17. I think he was 22. Earlier in the year, so he has gone up, but Anthony Volpe has, I don't think anyone knew this was coming. Obviously he was a pretty high draft pick. People expected good things out of him, but what he's done this year is just, no one could have expected it in 54 games at high.
Honestly, what I knew Volpe more for was being Jack Leiter's teammate in high school. I know he was a first round pick, but I think that was kind of like the biggest connection for him was that, he was Jack Leiter's teammate.
Yeah. But and then, I mean, his first year in 2019 at rookie ball, he had around a 700 OPS, which, I mean, it's rookie ball. Like, it's okay.
It was but a small then, sample size, though, too, right?
Yeah, 34 games. And then he missed last year, as did every minor leaguer. But this year, started the year in low A at Tampa, he took off. In 54 games, he had almost a 1.1 OPS, 12 home runs, 21 stolen bases, hitting 302. He looked amazing. He killed low A, moved up to high A, and continued to do the same. He had a 1.015 OPS, 8 more home runs. He has 7 more stolen bases. It's obviously a little harder to steal off low A than or high A than low A as players get better, but he's still hitting 311 with over a 1. OPS. I think everyone knows he's ready for double A, but then if you thought the riches stopped there, we have Oswald Peraza, who's the double A shortstop, who's also been having a really good year. So we've just kind of got a logjam. I don't think Peraza is thought of to be quite ready for AAA yet. He has over 900 OPS in AA, so he definitely could move up. They just haven't made that move yet. But at some point, one of these guys is going to have to move positions if you want to keep them both. I think there's been talks of Volpe playing third base. He's got a really good arm. They're both good defenders. Peraza, I think, is thought of as a little bit better of a defender. Volpe's a better hitter. I mean, they've both excelled everywhere this year. So our middle infield, obviously we had Josh Smith. He looked great, but we lost him in the Gallo trade. Can't have 50,000 infielders. So it makes sense to trade some of them.
I think that was Cashman's biggest win, is that he got guys without giving up our top prospects. And he somehow used black magic to get the teams to pay their salary.
Yeah. And then just as a kind of, I think those are the big guys this year that we've really seen take a huge step forward. And just some other guys for you guys out there to keep an eye on. Austin Wells right now is at high A. He was our draft pick last year at catcher. He has looked okay. I think his hitting has looked great. He has over 900 OPS or 800 OPS, sorry. But his defense, I've read, needs a lot of work. So I think that's kind of what's holding him back at this point. Trey Sweeney, our draft pick this year at shortstop, he's looked pretty good so far. In 9 games at Tampa, he has over 700 OPS. He killed rookie ball, so he moved up really fast. And then we have guys like Luis Medina, Ken Waldachuk, Yoendris Gomez, a lot of pitchers that have just looked disgusting this year with great stuff. And a lot to look forward to as Yankees fans in the years to come.
And our number 4 prospect might no longer be our number 4 prospect. He might get off the list because he seems to be shoving in the majors right now. Hasn't given up a run.
That was going to be the last guy I mentioned. I think at this point, some of these guys, a lot of you may not have heard of, but Luis Gil, everyone's heard of at this point. He has pitched 3 games, not giving up a single run. At some point, you got to think, is he just going to get called up to the majors and not be a prospect anymore? We're getting real close to finding that out. And it's exciting as a Yankees fan. The future of this team looks bright. If we lose a few of our top guys to free agency or something in the future, we have a lot to look forward to in the farm system. And if we aren't going to lose those guys and we want to trade for some big players, we have a lot to give. So I think the only untouchables really are Anthony Volpe and Jason Dominguez, but we have a lot. We have riches in the farm. It might not reflect.
They're still going to replenish it, right? This offseason when they signed the international free agents.
Yeah. So right now we are looking at Roderick Arias, I believe is how you say his name. He is currently the top international prospect. He plays shortstop. He's a switch hitter. His comps are Jose Reyes and Francisco Lindor. So, I mean, if that tells you anything, obviously comps are a little iffy in baseball, but he looks incredible. So that's just another player to keep our farm system going. Another top guy. He is why we want to stay under the cap. He's a big reason of it. And I think we just have a lot to look forward to. So that's kind of a little recap of our minor league system. Each week I'll try and include some highlights. Maybe Anthony Volpe just hit a walk-off home run a few days ago. Things like that. I'll include that to try and keep you guys up to date. If Jason Dominguez has a stretch where he hits 750 over 5 games with 4 home runs, you guys will know. So yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now. And I think really quick before we move on to our question of the episode, I think we could just do a super quick recap of the MLB, maybe just go over the standings, see where things sit right now and what we expect for the rest of the year. I'll just go over the standings really quick, Jatinder, and then we can talk about them super quick. In the AL East, we all know, Rays in first, Yankees 4 games back, Boston 5.5 back, Toronto's fell all the way to 10.5 back. The Orioles, they're being the Orioles. They've lost 16 games in a row. But yeah,
they
the
are
AL East.
We thought they are.
Yeah, the AL East, it's still a race. Anything can happen. Moving on to the AL Central, it's the White Sox.
It's pretty much locked in that the White Sox.
That's all that needs to be mentioned. All the other teams aren't doing very well. They're all over 10 games back. They're not in wild card contention. So moving on to the AL West, this is a pretty good division between three teams. Everyone might think the Astros have run away with it because nothing is ever said about the AL West, but they're only 2.5 games out of Oakland. And then 6.5 games back from Houston is the Mariners. So that's still anyone's ballgame. I don't think the Mariners really have what it takes to overtake.
They didn't do enough at the trade deadline. I was kind of puzzled by their trade deadline moves.
Yeah, but Oakland has been on fire recently up until that White Sox series, but they can bounce back. We all know Oakland's capable of crazy things at the end of the season. So yeah. Houston can't really let off the pedal right now. They still got to keep pushing.
And Oakland
and make sure...
started terrible. Didn't they lose that? I think they were like 2-11 or something. Yeah. They started off the year terrible. They stumbled out of the box.
Yeah.
But they're right there for the division. Yeah. So you can't count them out.
Yeah. And a recap of the wild card for the AL right now, the Yankees 1 game up, whoop, whoop. Let's go Yankees. We'll cover some of those more recent games next episode.
We have our eyes on bigger things though.
Yeah. Yeah. We're only 4 games back of that division. We want it. We're coming Rays. We're coming Flappy Boys. objects in your rearview mirror may appear closer than they seem. The Athletics are 1 game behind us for second wild card. And then Boston is 1/2 game behind Oakland for that second wild card spot, with Seattle 4 games back and the Blue Jays 5.5. So I think all those teams are definitely still contenders. I think if Boston continues the free fall and Oakland slows down a little bit, we could see the Blue Jays really kind of overtake that spot.
The Blue Jays have an easy, they've been losing lately, but they have an easy schedule coming up. So yeah, definitely keep your eyes out for the Blue Jays. They might shock you. Right now they're 5.5 out. You're like, oh, they're out of it. But at the end of September, don't be surprised if they take that wild card spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only team really holding – the only thing holding the Blue Jays back right now is their manager, Montoyo. He's making moves that make no sense. He's managed their bullpen horribly. I know yesterday they had first and second in the White with Sox the tying team? Runner up to play.
Oh, the Tigers. They played the Tigers.
Yeah, against the Tigers in the extra innings. And he brought in a guy that's a worse hitter to bunt. He pinch hit to bunt, which that was a thing.
Wild.
So the Blue Jays are being held back by their manager. We all know Vladdy. He's been incredible this year. He slowed down a little bit in the second half, but he's still
Teoscar
been great.
Teoscar seems to be going off.
Yeah,
they just lost Springer.
Yep, that's a huge loss for them. But we know they're a good team. They can really fight back. Moving to the NL, I think the NL is just as exciting as the AL right now. It's maybe even more exciting. Like, if you're just a baseball fan, not a Yankees fan, it might be more exciting because the NL East right now, I mean, a while ago, it looked like the Mets were just going to run away with it when Acuna went down and the Phillies weren't playing that well. But man, oh man, the Braves have just
the
been
Braves
on
and
fire.
Phillies made.
Yeah. Big moves.
They
yeah.
both made some big moves at the trade deadline. The Braves especially kind of rebuilt their outfield after losing all their top guys. So it's very interesting. Also, just to note, on July 4th, the Mets were in first, but they were only – the Yankees were 42-41.
41-41.
The Mets were only a couple games ahead of us, but they were ahead of their division by, like, 3 games.
Yeah.
So the Yankees and Mets weren't like off by record, but it seemed like the Mets were just like dominating But it was really their division was just kind of, you know,
floundering
there for the taking. Yeah. It was.
Yeah. And now things have really flipped on their head because Atlanta's mm-hmm. four games up in the division. They have been right there
one
with
of
the
hotter teams
as,
yeah.
as one of the hottest teams in baseball. The Phillies have been playing a good brand of baseball recently. They're four games back, but I mean, that could really change at any point. Bryce Harper mm-hmm. has been everything that contract is and more this year. He's doing what you expect him to do. He's not overrated. I don't care what anyone says. At this point, I think he's underrated by how much he gets called overrated. And the Mets are six games back. I mean, as a Yankees fan, I'd like to see the Mets do well. I think it's more fun when Subway Series has meaning to it. But as much as Mets fans were throwing it in our face earlier in the season when we were looking pretty bad, looking mm-hmm. down, it feels kind of good now that we're almost 20 games over 500 and they're two games under 500, it really has come back to bite them in the butt.
Yeah.
So
the Mets are also in a brutal stretch right now where they're playing the Dodgers and Giants.
And their injuries have been bad. I think DeGrom is
going to be done for the season. He's unlikely to be back.
Yeah. And Lindor's out. Baez is out. I think Nimmo is out. It's looking rough for them. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have the star power to overcome the injuries like the Yankees and Dodgers do because the Dodgers have had their own injuries. But I mean, I kind of feel bad for them, but their fans make it hard to feel bad for them. And then going into the NL Central, this one was looking like a super fun race, but the Brewers have kind of just taken over. They're 7.5 games up with the Reds right now.
I thought this was going to be the closest division. Yeah. I thought the Brewers, Cardinals, and then the Reds and Cubs, I thought could sneak in there. I know the Cubs won the division last year, mm-hmm. but you saw their offseason. They were kind of blowing it up. And you could see that they were trying to head for this rebuild. Yeah. But I thought maybe some of their guys might step up. It's their contract year. It just hasn't happened.
Yeah,
it looks like the Brewers are going to win this division.
Yeah, and then moving on to the NL West, man. I think everyone knew going into
the prize
this year,
of the story.
This is probably the best division in baseball. And then mm-hmm. everyone thought it was going to be Dodgers Padres. I think that's what everyone thought. And then the Giants have come out and they've just played baseball, man. They don't have superstars on their team. Like, I mean, Buster Posey, he's past his prime. They don't have huge names. Like
Brandon Crawford, Brandon Belt. These are guys that they had for years, but you wasn't expecting anything from them.
They don't have the Mookie Betts, the Aaron Judge, mm-hmm. the JD Martinez. They don't have those guys, but they've looked incredible. I mean, best
record
in baseball. They made some
great offseason moves, and guys have just been playing out of their minds. I don't know if that's a shot at them. That's not meant to be a shot at them. They're just playing really well, you know?
Yeah, and they're 1.5 games up with the Dodgers right now. We all know what the Dodgers did at the deadline, getting Trey Turner, Max Scherzer, Danny Duffy. They've really made themselves on paper. They are the best team in baseball. I don't think anyone can even make a sound argument for that. They've been playing great since the All-Star break, but so have the Giants. So they haven't really, I mean, they could definitely take over the lead in that division, but both of those teams are going to make the playoffs. It's not really a debate. They have the two best records in the NL by 3 or 4 games. So that, and then the Padres have, I'm not completely sure what happened to them. I think Tatis being hurt has hurt them. He's back now, but the time that he's missed is hurt. But they have.
But
just,
when he's been healthy, oh my God!
He's MVP. He's been incredible when he's healthy. I'm pretty sure he leads the league in NL in home runs, and he has missed what?
And
like
he's missed
games?
Like a month, right?
Yeah, like 20, 30 games this year.
it's insane.
Yeah. But they're 12 games back out of the division right now. And yeah, so obviously their eyes are set on the wild card now. And boy, this wild card race right now, Dodgers soundly in first by 10.5 games. They're going to get either the division or the wild card one. Them and the Giants are going to split that. But for that wild card two spot, we have a three-way tie right now. The Braves, the Reds, and the Padres all tied. It's who knows where it's going to go. I personally...
Well, the Braves...
Braves are in division.
They're tied in record.
So it's the Padres and Reds tied right now. Cardinals are 3.5 back. Phillies are 4 back. Mets are 6 back. All of those teams, all 5 of those teams can win it. It's going to be fun. For a fan of baseball, that race is going to be electric.
Fun next month. Yeah. It's going to be fun. I can't wait to see. I can't, what's your prediction? Who do you think takes it?
I have to say the Padres. On paper, they're the best team. If Tatis doesn't get hurt, he's the MVP. They have pitching. If Blake Snell figures out how to not be a walking run machine anymore, they're it's going to be tough to count against them. But it'd be fun to see the Rays or the Reds. The Reds, they're a young team. I don't think a lot of people expect them to be in this spot yet, maybe next year. But they're right there. They can do this. I mean, even the Cardinals, Arenado shutting up the Coors haters, the Phillies, Harper with a redemption. There's a lot of good stories. Yeah. I'd be happy with any of those teams to make it. But if I was a betting man, I'd probably put my money on the Padres.
I think I agree with you. They have the pieces to compete. You just got to worry about their health-wise. Yep. Hopefully now Tatis is playing the outfield to kind of keep him healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, and
I think Tatis leads them to a wild card spot, but hopefully he stays healthy.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we're at in the standings right now in MLB. Big stories this year. Trout missing way more time than he was supposed to. How is having an MVP year? Acuña having an MVP caliber year. He was out for the season. A lot of injuries. And then we have Mr. Showtime, Shohei Ohtani. The best season anyone's ever had in baseball. I don't know if it's tough because he's not leading in a war forever, but like as good as Barry Bonds was in 2003 or 2004, whatever the crazy year was, he didn't pitch. He didn't have a 2.7 ERA.
Yeah.
While leading the American League in home runs. Well,
Shohei is not a bad hitter either. He's leading the league in home runs.
40 home runs. It's not like he's not an average hitter and an average pitcher or a good hitter, average pitcher, good pitcher, average hitter. He's a great hitter and a great pitcher. No one has ever done that. You might think Babe Ruth. Yeah. Babe Ruth, when he was a good hitter, he was not a good pitcher. He wasn't doing what Shohei was. When he was a good pitcher, he wasn't a good hitter. He didn't do both at an elite level at the same time like Shohei is doing. Shohei's the MVP.
Yeah.
Don't tell me Vlad is the MVP because he's a better hitter. I don't care. He does not pitch at an elite level. Shohei is doing something we have never seen ever.
I'm not convinced that Vlad is the better hitter than Shohei. Shohei affects the game in different ways. His speed is insane.
Yeah, the fact that he's that fast for a pitcher, Shohei is a cheat code. He is who you wish you could have been in MLB Road to the Show.
Yeah, exactly.
He is a created player. It's crazy. And I think it's an awesome storyline. Screw Stephen A. Smith for saying he can't be the face of baseball because he can't speak English. He is the face of baseball right now.
The lineup around him is not that great because Trout is not in there. Rendon is not there. Yeah, Jared Walsh, who's actually having a really good season quietly, but he's not Trout.
Yeah, and I think this year has been just awesome as a baseball fan, and I think that's a pretty good recap of what's happened. So, if you want to get into our question of the day that kind of started this whole fun debate thing that me and Jatinder have been doing for a while. I think spend a little bit of time on that and then wrap up this episode and get ready for Yankees baseball.
I think this was actually the first thing I asked you, or like one of the first things I've ever asked you. First, I asked you, like, are you a Yankee fan? Because you had the shirt, which, obviously you are. But then I was like, is Jiminy Cricket a cricket or grasshopper?
Yeah. And
I think he's a grasshopper.
Yeah. But for anyone that doesn't know, if you don't, Jiminy Cricket is a cartoon character, and there is a debate that Jitender has that he claims that Jiminy Cricket is a grasshopper.
I don't claim he is a grass. He is
what?
He is a grasshopper. There is no claim to it. He is.
I mean, we have, for the listeners, we've been having this discussion since we were sophomores in college, and we have asked dozens of people throughout the years which one they think. And I would like to put it on record that right now I do believe the winning vote is for Cricket, and I'll put my debate out there. If you look at a picture of Jiminy Cricket, Jitender's main argument is his personality, I believe, and his color. But if you look at the anatomy of Jiminy Cricket, his head shape, his body shape, it looks like a grasshopper. I don't care about the color, or it looks like a cricket, sorry. I don't care about the color. Grasshopper looks nothing like Jiminy Cricket. I think that's the most important piece, because as we all know, cartoons, things have funny colors. They're not always the most accurate color, but he definitely has the anatomy of a cricket. And I think that's
also wrong.
That's the base of the argument. His name is Jiminy Cricket, so you got that going for you. How's that? How am I wrong? No.
Okay, first of all, his anatomy is not of a cricket. He has short antennas like a grasshopper, and also he's green like a grasshopper. And then just because his name is Jiminy Cricket doesn't mean anything. It could just be a joke, you know? It's like, oh, he's a grasshopper, but his last name's Cricket. How funny.
All right, so we're gonna go to his Wikipedia page. Jiminy Cricket, also referred to as J. Crick, Young Cricky, and Big Cricket, is the Walt Disney version of the Talking Cricket, a fictional character invented by Carlo Collodi in 1883. So you're going to tell me the Talking Cricket?
That the guy mistook a cricket for a grasshopper? Absolutely. I think he was drawing a grasshopper when he drew Jiminy Cricket. Because in Mulan, I don't know, have you ever watched Mulan? There's a cricket character. He looks nothing like Jiminy Cricket. He's purple, and he has long antennas, unlike Jiminy Cricket. He actually looks like a cricket, unlike Jiminy Cricket. So that's why I think he's a grasshopper.
I'm leaning more towards the body shape. The body shape looks that of a cricket and not a grasshopper. And
I completely disagree.
And our argument, and everyone we've asked throughout the years, the vote is leaning towards cricket. So I'm going to put a poll.
It's close, though. It's also a small sample.
Okay. I'm going to put a poll out on our Twitter and at The Bronx Story on Twitter. And any listeners out there, feel free to voice your opinion. If you missed the poll because you're listening to this episode a little later, feel free to tweet at us or DM us on Instagram what you think, what your argument is. We'd love to hear from you guys. And if you have any questions that you want to hear us debate, we'd love to. I think we have a lot in the back pocket in terms of questions throughout the years, but we'd love to get some new ones that we haven't thought of yet to really involve you guys. But yeah, so that's kind of the thing that we've been debating for a few years. Obviously, I stand cricket, the right side, and Jitender stands on grasshopper, which is wrong. But yeah, that's kind of the directions our questions go in. When we're not talking Yankees baseball, Jitender always comes at me with the most ridiculous questions that he can think of. And sometimes it leads into pretty funny debates. So yeah. All right, guys, thanks for listening. This has been It's a Bronx Story. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks, guys. You can check us out on Instagram and Twitter at The Bronx Story. We'll see you next week.
Let's go, Yankees. Let's play ball.
Drill deep to left field. There it goes. See ya. His first home run to left field all year. He crushed it. 6-2 A's. Boy, did he hit that ball.